All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today's February 13th, 2026, Friday the 13th. Chi-chi-chi, ha-ha-ha. And our top story is the volatility appears to be making a comeback. You know, me and my big mouth yesterday, we were talking about how precious metals had had a couple of calm days in a row, how I like to see, even though silver was down like a dollar and change yesterday morning, it wasn't making these big moves. And that's good. We want to see prices level off a little bit. Slow and steady wins the race. That's always been how I roll. And so I was encouraged by the calm I was seeing in precious metals. And then 2 hours later, in the blink of an eye, the price of silver sold off almost $8. Back comes the volatility. And it wasn't just in precious metals. We had Bitcoin dropped below briefly $65,000 yesterday. And, you know, we were talking about block fills. Was this like little who cares crypto exchange? It didn't do a lot of volume. It was this Susquehanna, you know, run exchange that they had halted withdrawals. And I said, hey, look, we see this during crypto winter, and we're probably going to see more. I didn't mean Coinbase within 3 hours on the same day, because that's what happened. Amid the volatility spike that we saw yesterday, we had Coinbase went down. You couldn't buy, you couldn't sell, you couldn't withdraw. Why does this always happen when Bitcoin is going down? When's the last time Coinbase went down for maintenance on a day that Bitcoin was going up big? I'll save you the trouble. It never freaking happens. So we had the volatility was back in Bitcoin yesterday. And then, of course, the NASDAQ sold off 469 points, 2% lower. So we had volatility in metals, tech stocks, and Bitcoin, just like the beginning of the month, the end of January, the same thing that we saw. And so it looks like that vol isn't done with us. Now, if you turn on CNBC, they're going to tell you, oh, it's because of the AI fear trade. AI is disrupting everything, and it's so awesome, and that's why this is happening. And there was even a headline yesterday. I couldn't believe my eyes. They were talking about commercial real estate stocks. And that the reason commercial real estate stocks were down yesterday was AI disruption. Okay, now, all right, that's one theory. That's one possible explanation for why commercial real estate stocks were down yesterday. I have a different theory. All right, now for this, we're going to really stretch the imagination here. Are you ready? We're going to don our tinfoil hats because this is crazy. My wild theory that the reason why commercial real estate stocks were down yesterday is because of commercial real estate. What a thought, right? Maybe the fact that these office buildings are selling for freaking 5% of the price they went for 10 years ago, just maybe that's why the stocks were down. Oh no, it's because AI is going to disrupt the flow of data in commercial real estate. And that's why, oh, gag me. Guys, these chatbots are a waste of money. We know this is a bubble. If anything, the volatility is coming back because people are starting to realize it's time to GTFO of tech because they know AI has been a failed experiment. But no, commercial real estate down because of AI. That's why the volatility is coming back. Keep telling yourself that, CNBC. Keep up the good work over there. Also going on this morning, the Consumer Price Index, CPI, inflation. Anybody remember that? Still a thing, apparently. But slightly less of a thing. Inflation came in lower than expected and down a decent clip from last month. And before people jump down my throat, let me just say, yep, these are government statistics, and the government statistics are often manipulated for political reasons. I can't claim that isn't happening here. And it's also worth pointing out that inflation coming down does not mean prices going down. It doesn't mean prices stopped going up. It just means prices are going up slower. So I'm sure we're going to get the anecdote of the price of my favorite thing I eat at the grocery store went up last month. I'm not saying that isn't happening, guys. It's just that numbers are what they are. The index is reported, and we report what the index reports. 2.4% year over year versus 2.5% expected, down from 2.7% last month. Pretty decent numbers, still well above the Fed's arbitrary 2% target. Life's still getting more expensive for people. But there's some interesting things going on within the categories here, especially within energy. The energy index was deeply negative for the month, mainly because gasoline and fuel oil got cheaper in January. That will not last in February. A lot of people are going to be like blindsided when they get their utility bills. from this cold spell, especially up here in the Northeast, where it feels like I live on a freaking glacier. The ice still hasn't melted from a month ago, but I digress. Now, that decline in the energy index partially offset by a big bump in electricity and natural gas. They keep getting more expensive. That is this reckless build-out of data centers driving up the price of electricity nationwide. And look, if electricity is getting more expensive, electricity touches everything. If the power prices are going up, then that means the factories are less efficient. They need to raise prices. The stores are spending more money to keep the lights on and the heat on. It's going to drive other things higher. So that electricity inflation is going to be a big deal. Keep an eye on that, especially as we head into the midterms. We've got a story later on in the show about dueling super PACs between OpenAI and Anthropic. They're all out there trying to buy politicians, even as politicians on both parties are trying to position themselves opposed to AI because of what they're doing to people's electric bills. What else we have? Used cars down big. That was interesting to see a big negative number in used cars. We'll talk more about that later in the show. The shelter index continues to be a big source of inflation, although rising slower. The rents are going up slower than they were in previous years. Now, when you look at the slowing inflation, and then you look at some of these other stories we're seeing out in the economy today, some of it starts to make sense, in particularly Wendy's earnings. Good God, were these bad. Now, look, Wendy's, all right, it's like fourth or fifth in the chain of fast food, and the whole fast food industry is struggling here. It's not exactly a great barometer of the economy, but good God, the numbers Wendy's just reported were so awful. U.S. same-store sales down 11.3% year over year. That is a death sentence for a fast food joint because their costs have only gone up. The food is more expensive. The labor is more expensive, and their sales are down 11% year over year. People aren't going to Wendy's anymore because they can't freaking afford it, because the solution to higher prices is higher prices. If you don't cut your prices in this economy, you're not going to survive. We've seen that in Pepsi and Coca-Cola earnings. Both of them mentioned that they're going to be lowering prices on some of their products because their sales just aren't good. We saw the same thing yesterday. Who was it that made this announcement? Somebody reported, it was right on the tip of my tongue a second ago, but somebody said that they were making investments in repricing, meaning we're going to lower our prices and it's going to take a hit in our earnings. We were just talking about that yesterday. Dagnabbit, I can't remember the name of the company. But we are seeing companies being forced to lower their prices because the lower K, the bottom 90% of the economy, is doing so bad that they just can't afford to eat out. They can't afford to shop. Now, also supporting those negative numbers that we saw in the used car numbers for the inflation print, Carvana. Pay attention to Carvana. All right, that is your next cockroach, Jamie Dimon, if you're listening. Carvana down about 17% over the last 3 days. Now, there has been no big news around Carvana, not since the end of January when Gotham City Research put out a rather damning short-selling report about Carvana, which is like the fifth short seller to target Carvana in the last 5 years. Hindenburg Research famously did that a few years ago. Everybody knows Carvana is a freaking fraud. We can all see it. Their CEO's father, Ernie Garcia Sr., is using this company called DriveTime to hide their losses. They're also using this Bridgecrest firm to service the loans. Oh, Ernie Garcia also is the CEO of Bridgecrest and owns the loan servicer. Everybody in the auto space is taking it on the chin, but Carvana is supposedly doing wonderful and doing great. Why? Because the secret ingredient is crime. And the no news that is driving this sell-off in Carvana shares, besides the Gotham Research report, 3 days ago, a judge ordered DriveTime to turn over documentation as part of an ongoing securities lawsuit. And the fact that, I mean, the judge ordered for attorney's eyes only, so there's kind of a gag order on it. But the fact that a judge is forcing Carvana to produce documentation that could potentially expose how they're using this undisclosed related party to hide their losses could crater a $74 billion used car vendor. Pay attention to that one, guys. That has been several years in the making. Now, we've also got a lot of stories about oil coming out here. OPEC Plus could be increasing production as soon as April now. Now, we've had a lot of stories about this oversupplied oil market, about there's excess supply, and yet we've seen oil prices go up. What the heck is going on? The oil market is a mess because of the seizing of tankers and because of what happened in Venezuela. The Russians are having a hard time getting their oil to market. It's sitting on tankers on the ocean just doing nothing. They can't move it. Ocean oil stored at sea is higher than it's been since 2020 when prices went deeply negative. At the same time, what happened in Venezuela threw a monkey wrench into global supply chains. We've got India is now buying Venezuelan oil instead of Russian oil. That story is breaking today. Cuba is going so dark you can see it from space now because Cuba used to get all their oil from Venezuela. And since Maduro vanished in the middle of the night, Cuba is not getting any oil from Venezuela now, and they can't keep the lights on. So it's basically a regime change via oil embargo is happening on Cuba right now. Now, the Russians have said, we're going to send oil to Cuba. Don't worry. Are we going to interdict those freighters too, or those tankers? Are we going to seize those tankers? Because I seem to remember the last time there was a thing with boats and Cuba, a lot of people like kissed their kids goodnight and didn't know if they were going to wake up the next morning because of a nuclear holocaust. Remember the whole Cuban Missile Crisis thing? We never really settled that, and now we're like blockading or whatever we're doing to Cuba again. That could potentially spiral out of control. That's something to keep an eye on. And we've got some AI bubble stories as well. We've got Nscale, which is the new Neo cloud that is financed by NVIDIA, so they can buy NVIDIA's chips, and then I'm sure NVIDIA rents them back from them also. They're doing a private credit deal with Blue Owl and PIMCO, more of that shady off-balance sheet financing to pay for NVIDIA's revenues. We've got more of that going on this morning. Applied Materials reported their earnings. That stock is ripping. Applied Materials, they manufacture the equipment that is used to manufacture semiconductors. Memory, in particular, is driving a big chunk of those Applied Materials earnings. Remember, Sam Altman bought all the freaking memory in the world. Can't remember where we put the rest of it. And now nobody can afford PCs. Nobody can afford RAM sticks or nothing. And, well, Applied Materials makes the equipment that makes the memory. So their sales are taking a big jump from there. And even as all that's happening, Sam Altman and Dario Amodi over at Anthropic, they're both starting their own AI super PACs to bribe politicians to get favorable legislation. Even as the whole country is screaming, stop building this crap. We don't want it. It's driving up our electric bills. Chatbots are stupid. They don't work that well. And no, CNBC, that's not why commercial real estate stocks are down. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? And let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it. And come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. Well, every single business day. So we won't be back tomorrow. We'll be back on Monday, though. The S&P 500 is pretty much unchanged here. Down a half a point, negative 0.01%. Unchanged for the S&P. After the volatility yesterday, the Dow is down 127 points, about a quarter of a percent lower for the Dow. And the NASDAQ has also swung red here, down 32 points or 0.14%. Stocks are quiet, especially compared to yesterday. We did have some widespread selling yesterday after a couple of days of relative calm. So we'll see what happens after the bell rings. Are we right back to the volatility, or are we going to have a relief rally? I don't know. The dollar is pretty much unchanged here, up 2 basis points, 96.94 for the DXY. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit lower on the long end, a little bit higher on the short end. The 30-year yield is at 4.717. That's down a point and change. The 10-year yield at 4.075, off by almost 3 points. The 2 years at 3.439%, down also almost 3 points. And the one-month T-bill at 3.696. Up by almost 1 basis point. Bonds are quiet this morning. Looking over at commodities, I would say this is a little more tame than yesterday, but not by much. Gold at least a little quiet here, just under 5,000 for spot gold, 49.98. That's up by 76 bucks or 1.5%. April COMEX gold futures are at 5,020. That's higher by 72 bucks and change or about 1.5%. Now, silver was looking good yesterday. We were quiet. We were in the mid-80s, and I was mentioning how we were only seeing $1 moves, and it was nice to see. I had to open my big mouth because 2 hours later, silver dropped $8 in the blink of an eye. Well, we're clawing back some of that, but still a little bit of volatility here. 79.01 for spot silver. That's higher by $3.73 or about 5% higher. Again, another big move in metals here. We've got $6 worth of intraday swings. March silver futures are at 78.93. That's higher by $3.31, 4.4% higher. I like the shiny, but calm down, everybody. The volatility in metals, I hate to see gold and silver trading like meme stocks. Copper, meanwhile, is down about 0.33%. Platinum is up 2.3%. Palladium is up about 0.9%. And crude oil down just a 0.1% here, 62.78 for March WTI futures. I'd expect that to be a lot lower given some of the stories we're going to get later in the show. But for now, oil is tame. And again, this is looking at the silver chart here. These are 1 hour candles. Now, here was that crazy volatility that we saw at the beginning of the month, right? That big sell-off, and then we had the dead cat bounce, and then a little bit more. We drifted down into the low 60s at one point, and then we had a couple of days of calm, and I was comforted by that calm. I wanted that quiet. I just had to say something. And then 2 hours after I said something yesterday, we got this big one-hour candle right down there, big red middle finger for Jack. Jack, keep your mouth shut about silver volatility. I think that was the message here. Now, we've been trading slightly up ever since. But still, guys, the volatility, it's not done with us yet. Now, Bitcoin was also selling off a little bit yesterday. We're off the lows. We went as low yesterday as $65,065. And then, of course, Coinbase strangely goes down for maintenance. And we're up about 2,000 since then, 67,266 as priced on Coinbase. And speaking of, Coinbase posted a surprise loss on crypto trading slowdown. They reported their earnings yesterday, and it was a pretty rough quarter for Coinbase. Coinbase posted a surprise quarterly loss on Thursday, making its first since the third quarter of 2023, as the crypto exchange was hit by weaker trading volumes during a period of broad digital asset sell-off. Now, I guess I'm not surprised they had a weak quarter, but they weren't supposed to post a loss here. Digital assets slumped in the final 3 months of 2025. Sentiment has remained largely downbeat for the sector, curbing volatility and in turn hurting the crypto exchange's trading desks. The company reported a loss of $666.7 million or $2.49 a share for the 3 months ended December 31st. That's compared to analyst expectations for earnings, a profit of 55 cents a share. Big miss here. Coinbase transaction revenue tumbled to $982.7 million, down from $1.56 billion a year earlier. The decline was largely driven by the more than 45% drop in consumer transaction revenue. So not a surprise to see less trading, but that loss was a lot bigger than people were expecting. And of course, right on cue, this is a screenshot from Coinbase website yesterday, February 12th. 10 a.m. Pacific time. We are aware that customers may be unable to buy, sell, transfer on Coinbase at this time. Our team is investigating the issue and will provide an update. Your funds are safe. Why does that always happen when crypto is going down? And I mentioned we were talking about that BlockFills story yesterday. And BlockFills is this stupid little crypto project nobody's ever heard of that was freezing withdrawals. And it wasn't surprising. This always happens. And I said, we're going to see more of these. And freaking 3 hours later, it's Coinbase on the same day. I didn't think it would happen that hard, that fast. You know, I'm thinking Binance might have trouble or one of these European or Asian exchanges will have problems. Not Coinbase. Yikes. Very yikes. So that was yesterday. All right, let's talk about the inflation rate here, guys. 2.4%. That's after two consecutive months of 2.7% year-over-year CPI. All right, so inflation came down a little bit. It's still too high. Notably, we had that big gap in October because of the government shutdown. Month over month, inflation also came in 0.2%. Now, that was down slightly from 0.3% in December and a little bit less than market expected. All right, so that's encouraging. The headline numbers a little bit better than people were afraid of. Core inflation came in at 2.5% year over year. That is in line with expectations. No surprises there. Down slightly from 2.6%. Remember, guys, inflation coming down doesn't mean prices falling. Inflation is a rate of change. As long as this is positive, prices are still going up. They're just going up slower. Also, core inflation month over month came in at 0.3% in line with expectations. That's the only one that increased up slightly from the month-over-month number we got in December of 0.2. So where is the inflation? This is from the BLS news release here. Here's the all items index. You can see there's your 2.4% headline number. The food index went up 2.9% for that's the year over year number for the month. That was driven mainly by food away from home, restaurants getting more expensive there. Now, that's interesting because people can't afford it because of the lower K of the economy. And so we're seeing things like those Wendy's earnings, which were just dreadful. 11% decline in U.S. same-store sales. By the way, that we're going to get to that. They're closing stores. Look at their earnings numbers. Just really bad numbers from Wendy's. All right, so we're still seeing 2.1% inflation for food at home. That's at the supermarket. That disproportionately affects the poor and the middle class. No surprises there. Now, the energy index was actually pretty deeply negative for the month of January, down just 0.1% year over year. Now, there's some pros and there's some cons within that energy, right? Energy commodities like gasoline and fuel oil, they were both negative sharply. All right, year over year, gasoline was down 7.5%. Fuel oil was down 4.2% versus the same time a year ago. But also within that energy index, look at energy services up 7.2%. That was caused by electricity rising at 6.3%, more than double the rate of inflation everywhere else in the economy. That is your data centers making electricity more expensive. And the same thing with utility piped gas services. All right, that's, yeah, the winter months makes natural gas more expensive, but also a lot of natural gas turbines being built to power these data centers, drawing on the same pipeline capacity that we compete with for home heating. So yeah, utility pipe gas service up 9.8%. Your electric and your gas bill getting more expensive because of AI slop. Oh, good. Also noteworthy here was the big decrease in used cars and trucks. Now, actually, let's look over several months here. For the month of December, used cars and trucks dropped 0.9%. Then in January, down 1.8%. So the decline in prices of used cars and trucks is accelerating. That's interesting because we're going to be talking about Carvana in a minute. That's important there. And of course, the biggest category driving inflation has always been shelter. Owner's equivalent rent is the biggest contributor to the index. There it is. 3% year over year. That's the lowest we've seen in quite some time for the shelter index. It's still too high for anybody struggling to make the rent payments, but it is much better than the 5% and change we were getting a few years ago. And on a monthly basis, that number dropped to just 0.2%. So those were the categories that were kind of outliers from the index there. Now, let's talk about, we mentioned Wendy's. And these, again, Wendy's, it's not that important of a company as far as like economic barometers go. But these numbers are so bad. And it shows you what's happening in the middle to the bottom rungs of the restaurant space. The fast food chain said same restaurant sales fell 10.1% in the fourth quarter from a year ago, mostly driven by a drop in domestic sales. People in the U.S. are not eating at Wendy's. Wendy's had a drop in same restaurant sales in the fourth quarter as weakness in its U.S. business persisted. Same restaurant sales fell 10.1% compared with an 8.5% decline. So they were expecting a bad quarter, but was even worse than expected. The decline was mostly driven by the U.S., where same restaurant sales fell 11.3%, while they were down 2% internationally. So a lot worse here than overseas in a big way. Our fourth quarter performance was in line with expectations, their CEO said. Maybe you need better expectations then, sir. Wendy's stock fell 7.2% pre-market trading. Let's see. The fast food chain is making progress on its turnaround plan. Are they really? Cook said. The company in November said it would close hundreds of locations through the next year. The closures are expected to affect mid-single-digit percentage of Wendy's 6,000 restaurants in the U.S. That's somewhere around 300 stores, which would be somewhere around 7,500 jobs going away. Lower-income consumers are pulling back on spending. In particular, Cook said in November, some restaurants reported consumers making fewer trips and smaller purchases due to affordability concerns. Net income was $26.5 million or 14 cents a share, compared with $47.5 million or 23 cents a share a year earlier. Look at that drop in net income from 47.5 down to 26.5. Wendy's is getting clobbered by higher prices here. They need to cut their prices, and people just aren't eating there because they can't afford it. And, well, Wendy's has already seen their profit margins cut in half. It's not like they can really afford to lower prices much. This company's in trouble here, and you can see it in the stock. down 4%, 3.5% ahead of the opening bell after falling 7% yesterday, almost 8% yesterday. It's down 49% over the last year. So it looks like more pain ahead for this company. Now, you can see the food away from home and the CPI results reflected in that Wendy's story. And you can also somewhat see how the falling auto prices, the falling used car prices could be reflected with this Carvana story, although this is being amplified by the fact that Carvana is a freaking fraud. We just haven't proven it yet. Carvana can't stop falling. Is this where the wheels finally come off? This was in 24/7 Wall Street. Now, this is from yesterday. Carvana shares have surged 3,100% over the past 3 years, defying critics and short sellers who have pointed to suspicious financial deals involving related parties like DriveTime and Bridgecrest. Despite this run, a January report from Gotham City Research accused the company of hiding over $1 billion in expenses through undisclosed transactions, inflating profits, and deeming the stock uninvestable. The allegations triggered an immediate plunge in shares that day, and the stock has continued trailing lower over the past 2 weeks. In afternoon trading, this is yesterday, the online used car dealer is down another 10% on lower 10% lower on reverberations emanating from a short seller's recent report, with the stock down 29% from its all-time high. Is this where Carvana begins careening out of control? Now, look, we're not going to revisit all the Ernie Garcia, DriveTime, Bridgecrest stuff, guys. Check out the Hindenburg Research short report from a few years ago or the Gotham City short seller report from this one from just 2 weeks ago. But in particular, this recent drop of the last 3 days, despite no company-specific news early on, Carvana continued to extend its losses from the Gotham report. Investor anxiety appeared tied to the upcoming earnings release next week amid ongoing scrutiny of the short seller's claims. The report's focus on related party dealings has raised doubts about the sustainability of Carvana's turnaround, potentially eroding confidence. However, around noon today, this is a few days ago, it was reported that a federal judge had granted securities litigation plaintiffs' motion to compel the production of drive time attachments that were previously withheld and were designated attorney's eyes only. It brought home the legal risk attached to the Gotham City report. All right, so this is important. All right, these investors are suing Carvana basically for securities fraud, and it all centers around how they're using this company, Drive Time, which is owned and controlled by the CEO's father, Ernie Garcia Sr., and the judge ordered them to produce these Drive Time documents that were withheld during discovery in this lawsuit. That means they have to finally open up Drive Time's books to scrutiny, even though they're saying for attorney's eyes only. That story broke 3 days ago, and we have seen three consecutive days of declining prices for Carvana stock ever since. It's off about 17% since that story broke. Just the prospect of somebody getting a look at Drive Time's books knocked 17% off of a $75 billion company. This is an obvious fraud. They just can't prove it yet. As soon as they prove it, this thing is a zero. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, looking at a five-year chart of Carvana, Carvana is dependent on the ABS market. They take their car loans, they bundle them into bonds, and they get them the hell off their books and sell them to unsuspecting investors who are going to lose all their money probably. Right? Carvana is basically Tricolor without the illegal immigration angle. That is what this company is. If they get cut off from the securities market, if the bond market will no longer buy their bundled car loans, you need look no further than 2021, the last time that happened, to see what will happen to their stock. In 2021, this thing was trading at around $350. And by 2023, this thing was down to like $5 because they got cut off from the ABS market and they were stuck holding those garbage loans on their own books. Now, through what many consider to be widespread fraud, they were able to undo that. They were able to start selling their ABS again, and the stock has rallied several thousand percent since then. But if it turns out that this is another cockroach, another First Brands, another Tricolor, this thing is a goose egg long term. So be careful in this one. All right, now we got a lot going on in the oil market as well. OPEC Plus leans toward resumption in oil output increases from April, sources say. More oil to hit the market, even as people are talking about oversupply. OPEC Plus is leaning toward a resumption in oil output increases from April, three OPEC Plus sources said, as the group prepares for peak summer demand and price strength is bolstered by tensions over U.S.-Iran relations. Sorry, guys, I got a frog in my throat today. The resumption would allow OPEC leader Saudi Arabia and fellow members such as the UAE to regain market share at a time other OPEC Plus members such as Russia and Iran contend with Western sanctions and Kazakh output is restrained by a series of setbacks. Now, that paragraph is interesting because that suggests some infighting within OPEC, that you've got two big OPEC members, the UAE and the Saudis. They're trying to capture market share because of the opportunity created by the Russians and the Iranians having sanctions problems and aircraft carriers parked off their coast. So that suggests maybe some infighting within OPEC. And look, cartels only work if everybody's on the same page about controlling prices. And it's hard to control prices when the two of the biggest producers in the world, the U.S. and Venezuela, no longer play ball in your court. So OPEC is losing a lot of power here. Now, all three OPEC Plus sources who declined to be identified by name said the eight members at the March 1st meeting were leaning towards a resumption in production quota increases from April. They're talking about this March 1st meeting like it's past tense. So maybe eight members who are expected at this March meeting is what they're saying here. But three other sources familiar with OPEC thinking said they expected increases to resume in April. No decision has yet been made, and talks will continue in the weeks ahead of the March 1st meeting, two of the OPEC Plus sources said. All right, so OPEC potentially increasing flow, the Saudis and the Emiratis trying to gain market share from the Russians and the Iranians. By the way, we have another aircraft carrier heading to Iran right now. The USS Ford, the biggest aircraft carrier in the world, is leaving the Caribbean after the Maduro raid. Now they're heading to Iran, which is, I guess, where the bombs are going to fall next. And even as that is all going on, we've got Reliance gets U.S. license to directly buy Venezuelan crude. This is the biggest oil refinery in India buying Venezuela oil potentially. Again, what happened with that Maduro raid, that was a major reshuffling of geopolitical pieces on the chessboard, and we're still seeing the reverberations of that. Indian refiner Reliance Industries has received a general license from the U.S. government that will allow it to purchase Venezuelan oil directly, according to a person familiar with the matter. Reliance, owned by billionaire Mukesh Ambani, applied for the permit last month and received it from the Treasury Department a few days ago, the person said, asking not to be named as the matter is not public. The move comes immediately on the heels of a trade deal with the U.S. that slashes punitive tariffs for Indian exports, but demands that the country stop importing discounted Russian oil. The Indian government has asked state-owned refiners to consider buying more Venezuelan crude as well as oil from the U.S. So now we can see why that Russian oil is being stuck in tankers. Besides the fact that the U.S. and Europe are seizing those tankers, the Indians aren't buying it anymore. And since Russia was kicked out of the SWIFT system, India had been the destination for most of that Russian oil. Now it's got nowhere to go. Venezuela is unlikely to produce large volumes of crude anytime soon, but even limited supplies provide a fallback option for India's largest refiner. Now, that last paragraph is important. I share that sentiment. I don't think production is going to surge in Venezuela right away. We may see some small increases by some low-hanging fruit that U.S. companies are able to come in and get them up and running, but the major CapEx investments are going to take years to materialize. But that doesn't mean there's no oil to sell to India, because that Venezuelan oil is no longer going to China and it's no longer going to Cuba. And actually, you can see that from space. Check out this one. Cuba is struggling to keep lights on amid Trump's oil blockade. Now, you notice how Bloomberg is really like painting the picture here. Usually Bloomberg is a white background and black font, but because we're talking about blackouts here, they go with the white font and the black background for the Cuba blackout. Nice, subtle touch there, Bloomberg. Just weeks into a U.S. pressure campaign to halt all oil shipments to the Caribbean island, a Bloomberg News analysis of satellite imagery finds the level of light at night has dropped as much as 50%. You can see communism from space, especially when the U.S. cuts off your oil supply. Cuba's blackout problem has worsened in the months since the U.S. cut off oil shipments to the island. Its grid was fragile even before a critical transmission line failure in early December temporarily severed the link between Havana and the Caribbean country's primary thermoelectric power plants in Matanzas. Then the Trump administration blocked fuel shipments that supply 60% of the roughly 100,000 barrels of crude a day it needs to feed its aging power system. Available electricity has plummeted since the start of the year, and it's disproportionately affected rural areas and provincial hubs, according to Bloomberg News analysis of satellite imagery. The level of light emitted at night in major eastern cities like Santiago de Cuba and Holguín has dropped as much as 50% compared to the historical average. And I guess they have this image here showing the luminosity. Of course, Havana, where most of the what remains of the wealthy Cubans live, and of course the capital, that is still lit up at night. The rest of the island is pretty much dark as soon as the sun goes down. Look, U.S. cutting off shipments to Cuba almost led to nuclear war when it had. We did this like, what was it, 60 some odd years ago. I don't think we're going to go there again. But right now, the only hope of oil for Cuba is Russian tankers. And we've been seizing Russian tankers. So this does rhyme a little bit. I don't think the Russians are going to be putting missiles in Cuba anytime soon or anything like that. But the deal was, you know, back from the Kennedys and everything, the deal that they cut in that bar in the middle of the night in Washington, D.C., was pull the missiles out of Cuba and we'll stop. We won't invade. We'll stop blocking the boats. So that's worth keeping in mind here, guys. A lot is changing in the global oil market since this Venezuela raid. Meanwhile, Nscale lines up $1.4 billion in chip loan from PIMCO and Blue Owl. Nscale, that's another one of these neoclouds. It's a European neocloud. They get their money from NVIDIA. They give the money right back to NVIDIA. That's no longer enough. Now they're getting their money from PIMCO and Blue Owl, which subtitles, when you hear PIMCO and Blue Owl, you need to think your 401k, your pension, your IRA, because that's where they get their money from. And that's the latest off-balance sheet private credit funding to sacrifice at the altar of the AI bubble. Now, even as that is going on, Applied Materials, their forecasts, upbeat results on AI demand and memory shortage. We're going to go through this one quick. The memory shortage was the difference maker in this one. Applied Materials has been posting big earnings beats for several consecutive quarters already. The memory shortage is a new development. Applied Materials stock is ripping here, 12.9% higher right after the open, $369 for Applied Materials. Over the last year, this one is up 81.5% and climbing again this morning. And I have to talk about this. I talked about this in the opening monologue, and I just have to mention it again. This is the dumbest headline I have seen possibly in my life. And I have seen some pretty dumb headlines. Office real estate stocks tumble as AI disruption casualties in the stock market grow by the day. And again, maybe, guys, just maybe, office real estate stocks are down because of office real estate. I know. It's shocking. It's crazy to think that maybe CNBC might be just taking everything that happens in the world and saying, why would AI do this? But just maybe when a building goes from $100 million to $5 million in a year, the stocks associated with that building might also go down. I know it's crazy, but I just figured I'd mention that. And last but not least, again, we're not going to go too deep in the weeds on this one, but it does bear mentioning OpenAI and Anthropic battle in the political arena. Pay attention to this one, guys. AI is going to be an election issue in the midterms. AI affordability, data center bans, what they're doing to electricity prices, absolutely going to be a big thing in the midterms. We're already seeing Republicans and Democrats alike are pushing for moratoriums on data centers at the state level. I think they're probably going to use the AI bubble. They're going to beat President Trump over the head with this in the midterms because of his silly Stargate press conference that he had and how he got into bed with the AI companies. I think he's going to regret it. But in this case, you've got OpenAI and Anthropic are each funding their own political action committees, and they're lobbying on opposite sides of the issue of national regulation of AI. Not data center moratoriums or anything like that. Will the regulations for AI be at the state level or at the national level? Anthropic wants it at the national level. OpenAI wants none at all. Either way, when I see people like Sam Altman trying to buy politicians, I can't help but notice the hair on the back of my neck stands up. And I just want to say thank you very much. Hold on, I got to find my button there. There it is. Hey, thank you very much to Mr. Lily, Ms. Lily Von Stoop, who says, happy belated birthday, Jack. Thank you very much. Birthday was yesterday. I appreciate that very much, Lily. No worries on the belatedness. I appreciate the super chat, the support of the channel, and the well wishes. Uncle Fedster, what's going on, Uncle Fed? He says, looking to buy the dip, but premiums on ASEs are around Friday the $13. Your opinions on whether they'll drop? I don't know on whether they will drop or not, these $13 premiums on Eagles. That being said, I'm not paying it, $13 premiums on Eagles. No effing way. The premiums on American Silver Eagles were as low as $2 a couple of months ago. And then all of a sudden, this AI Silver guy comes out, starts spouting off all this phony BS about bank failures and crap like that. Next thing you know, premiums on ASEs jump like 500-600%. Kind of crazy. It's almost like the coin dealers may have had something to do with that AI Asian guy video. And, you know, there certainly was an incentive for them to do so. Oh, but I digress. No, I'm not paying $13 for Silver Eagle premiums. I would point out constitutional junk silver, the 90% U.S. coinage, you can still get that for less than spot, $1 to $2 back a spot per ounce. I think that is the best deal that's out there for physical silver right now. That would be if I was buying more metal right now, which I'm not doing until I see this volatility settle TF down. If I was to buy metal right now, I would buy junk silver, not ASEs. And if the volatility settles down, I expect we probably would see those premiums come down a little bit. For now, the dealers are underbidding and way overbidding on their sell prices. They got a great big spread because they're trying to capture that intraday volatility so they don't get cleaned out. This is a hard time to be a coin shop owner right now, I can tell you that. Thank you, Uncle Fedster, for supporting the channel. Hey, Mr. Mod, what's going on, sir? He says, markets are closed on Monday. Be back on Tuesday for President's Day. Thank you, Mish, for the reminder. So, okay, you remember the thing where I was like, we do this every day, but not tomorrow because it's Saturday. We'll be back on Monday. Apparently, it's Tuesday. I was way off on the whole when we'll be back. Thank you, Mish, for letting us know. No show on Monday due to markets being closed. See you guys on Tuesday. Thanks, Mish. Living our destiny. What's going on? Clippy says, don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you so much, Living Our Destiny. And Clippy, it looks like you're trying to pump my channel. Want some help? Thanks, Liv. Appreciate it. Hey, Jermaine Mitchell, 2375, says, do these politicians see the AI bubble coming? I think Ron DeSantis does. I think Bernie Sanders does. I think President Trump, now he does. I think he didn't see it coming back last year after his inauguration when he hitched his political wagon to that horse, and now it's about to drag him off a cliff. I remember that Stargate press conference, and I remember saying he is going to regret this. When this bubble pops, this photo op with him and Altman and Ellison and Masason, they are going to beat him over the head with it. You better believe by the time the midterms roll around, you're going to see some political ads on YouTube or on TV of President Trump with Sam Altman, probably with like the vignette, you know, how they make it a little bit black and white to make him look a little bit more villainous. You'll definitely get ads where they beat him over the head with the AI bubble. This is now becoming a bipartisan issue. And bipartisan, I mean, both parties freaking hate the AI bubble. How much longer can this bubble continue? Because it's a contest between I hate AI and I hate AI even more. Doesn't matter who wins. It ain't good for AI. All right. And as soon as you start driving up electricity prices for poor people, you are done politically. You better believe that. Nobody's going to stand in front of that and defend it. Thank you very much, Jermaine, for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover says stall tactic. What's the stall tactic? What were we talking about with stall? Am I stalling? I don't stall. Well, I guess since we're done stalling here, I'm not really sure where we're going with Hunt and Cover. I appreciate that. Oh, here we go. Somebody else says, Judge, now I see what you're doing, Hunt and Cover. Judge fixing to halt the ballroom, Trump crying. The ballroom is stupid. The ballroom, number one, it was a dumb idea. And number two, to make an issue out of the ballroom is a dumb idea. Companies paying for the ballroom, getting preferential treatment and policy, that's worth looking into. It's just, the whole thing is stupid. We have so many more bigger problems than the ballroom. I don't understand it. And why? Are we going to have balls at the White House? Why do we need to have balls at the White House? Is there not a convention center in Washington, D.C. or Hyatt with a nice ballroom that we can use? Whatever. The guy likes to put his name on everything. He likes gold-plated everything. It's part of his narcissistic personality disorder. I don't really get the big deal over it, though. Thank you, Richard, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. We'll be back on Tuesday due to the holiday. No show on Monday. What else? Thank you so much for the super chats, everybody, as well as my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. M and J, super chats equals lightning round like button goal. Very nice, M and J. Till next time, everybody. Live small and dream big.